भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is Canto 10, which is entitled Samum Bonum. Chapter 2, Prayers by the Demigods. Text 6. Bhagavan Api Vishvatma Viditva Kansajam Bhayam Yadunam Nijanathanam Yogamayam Samadhishat Bhagavan Api Vishvatma Viditva Kansajam Bhayam Yadunam Nijanathanam Yoga Mayam Samadhishat Bhagavan Api Vishvatma Viditva Kansajam Bhayam Yadunam Nijanathanam Yoga Mayam Samadhishat. Please chant. Matajis. Word meanings. Bhagavan, Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Api, also. Vishvatma, who is the Super Soul of everyone. Viditva, understanding the position of the Yadus, and his other devotees. Kansajam, because of Kansa. Bhayam, fear. Yadunam, of the Yadus. Nijanatanam, who had accepted him, the Supreme Lord, as their supreme shelter. Yogamayam, unto Yogamaya, the spiritual potency of Krishna. Samadhishat, ordered as follows. Translation. To protect the Yadus, his personal devotees, from Kansa's attack, the personality of Godhead, Vishvatma, the supreme soul of everyone, ordered Yogamaya as follows. Purport. The word Bhagavan Api Vishvatma Viditva Kansa Jambayam are commented upon by Srila Sanatana Goswami. Bhagavan Swayam is Krishna, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. He is Vishvatma, the original Supersoul of everyone, because his plenary portion expands as the Supersoul. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 13.3, Kshetragyam Chapi Mam Vidhi Sarva Kshetra Shubharata. Lord Krishna is the Kshetragya, or Supersoul, of all living entities. He is the original source of all expansions of the personality of Godhead. There are hundreds and thousands of plenary expansions of Vishnu, such as Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudeva. But here, in this material world, the Vishvatma, the Supersoul for all living entities, is Kshiradakashayi Vishnu. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.61, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesher Junnatishtati. The Supreme Lord is situated in the heart of all living entities, O Arjuna. End quote. Krishna is actually Vishvatma by his plenary expansion as Vishnu Tattva. Yet because of his affection for his devotees, he acts as Supersoul to give them directions. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishta vadasmritir jnanam apohanam cha. The affairs of the Supersoul pertain to Kshirodakashayi Vishnu, but Krishna took compassion on Devaki, his devotee, because he understood her fear of Kansa's. He understood her fear of Kansa's persecution. A pure devotee is always fearful of material existence. No one knows what will happen next. From one may have to change his body at any moment, tatha dehantara prapti. Knowing this fact, a pure devotee acts in such a way that he will not have his life spoiled by being obliged to accept another body and undergo the tribulations of material existence. This is bhayam or fear. Bhayam ditiya vinibeshata syat. Bhagavatam 11.237. This fear is due to material existence. Properly speaking, everyone should always be alert and fearful of material existence. But although everyone is prone to be affected by the ignorance of material existence, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is always alert to the protection of his devotees. Krishna is so kind and affectionate toward his devotees that he helps them by giving them the intelligence by which to exist in this material world without forgetting him even for a moment. The Lord says, Tesham eva nukampartam aham jnana jamtamaha nashayam yatma bhavasta jnana deepena bhasvata. That is, out of compassion for them, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with a shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. Gita 10.11. The word yoga means link. Any system of yoga is an attempt to reconnect our broken relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are different types of yoga, of which bhakti yoga is the best. In other yoga systems, one must undergo various processes before attaining perfection. But bhakti yoga is direct. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 6:47, Yoginam api sarvesham madgatenantaratmana shadavan bhajate yomam same yuktatamo mataha. Of all yogis, he who always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. For the bhakti yogi, a human body is guaranteed in the next existence, as stated by Lord Krishna, Shuchi nam shimatam gehe, yoga bhrashto vijayate. Yoga maya is the spiritual potency of the Lord. Out of affection for his devotees, the Lord always stays in spiritual touch with them. Although otherwise, his maya potency is so strong that she bewilders even exalted demigods like Brahma. Therefore, the Lord's potency is called Yoga Maya. Since the Lord is Vishvatma, he immediately ordered Yoga Maya to give protection to Devaki. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaham Mukham Karati Vachalam Pangum Langati Girim Yat Kripatamaham Bande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaiva Cha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaham Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Kaura Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. To protect the Yadus, his personal devotees, from Kamsa's attack, the personality of Godhead Vishvatma, the supreme soul of everyone, ordered Yoga Maya as follows. So the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is a culmination of the book, we could say, and whatever happens afterwards is also very important. But this is the culmination of Srimad Bhagavatam. 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. By the way, the Bhagavatam itself is culmination of Vedic literatures. All of the Vedas are codified in the Vedanta Sutra, and then Vedanta Sutra is fluffed out in the Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam is literally the essence of it all. And then the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is the culmination of the book. Why is that so? Well, because the topic of the 10th canto is Krishna. Actually, Krishna is the topic of the whole book, but explicitly, Krishna is the topic of the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, to think about Krishna, to serve Krishna, to meditate upon Krishna, this is what constitutes the goal of life and also means of achieving the goal of life. This is also a means of protection in this world. One who always, I forget the Upanishadic verse, that one who always remembers Krishna is always protected. So, pause there. And then quickly over to, if I put it any closer, I will be running risk of biting it. So maybe volume could be turned up. Okay. Can everyone hear? Okay, so we're good. All right. Just a quick detour in regards to an article I read not too long ago, maybe a month or so ago. materialists, they really, really, really hard try to avoid avoid Krishna, and they try to avoid anything spiritual, anything metaphysical, soul, God, these kind of things they try to avoid, because they're materialists by definition. Materialist is one who thinks that there's nothing outside of matter. Everything there is matter, and therefore all that is to be understood is matter, and that matter is to be understood through matter. And whatever there's nothing besides matter. Everything is simply interaction of material particles. And so they also tried to explain, the article tried to explain higher consciousness versus lower consciousness in biological terms by literally describing the brain and how they map the brain, etc., etc. Of course, they even, these kind of people, they also make claims that things such as religion are illusory, because you see, if you can stimulate, there's a specific section of the brain, if you stimulate, you may have religious experiences. I'm not going to get into it, but in other words, they're really confusing two things. They're confusing the source with the media or conductor. In other words, the brain merely conducts consciousness, just like water passes through a hose. And if you do something to the hose, well, you will have influenced the water. But the hose, and specifically that spot where you influence the hose, is not the source of water. Water exists outside of the hose and independent of the hose. Just the fact that you can manipulate the hose and therefore you can manipulate the appearance of water does not mean that the hose is the source of water. So that's why I'm not going to get into it. It's actually a really bad argument. But so this article, interestingly, it was cute in many ways. Not very intelligent. But certain aspects of this article I found relevant. So they say that literally there is, as there is higher and lower consciousness, there's also higher and lower brain. As a matter of fact, they say that if you think and psychologically function in terms of lower consciousness, literally your lower brain lights up. And they can, of course, they map the brain so they can see all this. And when you think in terms, when you have elevated thoughts, then the upper portion, like physically upper portion of your brain lights up. As a matter of fact, they even have the name for the lower brain, right? They call it reptilian brain, sometimes reptilian mind, because it's the primitive mind, primitive brain. And what goes on in there is very primitive. Why is it very primitive? It is primitive because these thoughts are self-centered. They're narrow. They're not wide. They don't comprehend a wide or a greater reality. Rather, a person who's functioning in this kind of capacity tends to be narrow-minded, tends to have a difficulty seeing a larger picture, tends to be very much concerned with immediate needs. And so this type of consciousness tends to be triggered by threats. In other words, when someone's under a threat, physical threat, then our first instinct is very likely to be a primitive instinct. Like once I saw in San Diego on a beach, one fellow surprised another fellow, and the surprised fellow, without thinking, just turned around and punched the other guy. It's a very primitive response. But there are other threats also. There are other threats, like, for example, fashion threat. That's my term. It's not a clinical condition yet, though even we could make a case for a clinical condition. Fashion threat, that when you appear in public, that you don't have a pimple on the tip of your nose, and that your attire is up to the latest, whatever is socially considered cool, etc. And so under these threats, our lower brain tends to light up. In other words, we think in terms of lower consciousness, very self-centered, primitive, base. And so we become very self-conscious. So everyone's looking at me, you know, what do I look like? How's my chador? That's what I wear. How's my queer? How's my shika? Oh, didn't tie it. etc., etc. And so instead of thinking in big terms, comprehending the large reality, one shrinks down to immediate reality and thinks in very narrow terms and tends to often behave like an animal, in a, you know, unsophisticated animal or a bit more of a sophisticated animal. But these are very basic functions of very basic psychological functions of a being. And so on this plane, the person experiences fear, tends to think in terms of competition, etc., etc. Whereas when one is experiencing, as they say, higher consciousness, then one starts to see a larger picture. And they say that usually this type of thinking is triggered when you step away. When you're not, the tendency to think like this is when you're not under immediate threat. There's no fashion threat. There's no hunger threat. There's no physical threat. There's no threat of embarrassment, etc., etc. And usually these moments, as they say, when you're out in the nature watching the sunset, whatever, there's none of these threats. You're at your leisure moment and things are beautiful and relaxed around and you start to have profound thoughts. And so when you're not under a threat, then you start to think more, your thinking starts to expand. And then you decentralize. This is very important. If you centralize, if you perceive this world from your own little position, then how accurate can that be? That's literally egocentric worldview. In Krishna consciousness, for example, we're taught to see the world from Krishna's point of view, which is a large point of view. But when you function in terms of lower nature, then you're very self-centered. And so you become decentralized in the sense that you don't think anymore, at this point, you don't think of your immediate needs responding to these gross and subtle threats, but you're starting to think of other beings. You start to see a larger picture. You start to see yourself not as all and be all, but you see yourself as just one little unit in a large picture. You start to see time as not just some kind of immediate thing that brings you food on the table and brings you a girlfriend or boyfriend or the latest gadget or takes it away from you. But you see time in huge brackets. You see huge spans of time, and you ask yourself, what's the point of it all? Where does this all lead to? Etc., etc. Viciousness. You start to perceive viciousness not as evil, even though it might be evil, and you may see it as evil, but not at this point you're able to see viciousness not merely as evil, but you start to see viciousness as a result of something. There is a saying, and you might have heard it. I heard it for the first time some months ago, that those who need love the most show it in most unloving ways. But if you know, if someone who's terribly in need of some affection behaves in horrible ways, like because their behavior is a threat to you, you're not thinking, oh, this poor person really needs some affection here. You know, you're thinking, this son of a schmitch, I'm going to let you have it. And you start to behave like an animal. So in other words, compassion is not really kicking in. You're really functioning in very base terms. So, and on and on and on. I think I get my point. So I disagree with some things about the article and agreed with some other. And so why am I saying this? Because we see that that when people of who function very much in terms of lower consciousness, when they take to religion, Man, that's ugly. That gets really, and the Bhagavatam also says this, right? Archayam eva harayesh pujitam yashadehate natad bhakteshu janeshu sabhakta prakrita smritaha. Such a devotee should be known as a materialistic devotee. Why materialistic? Because the consciousness of this person has grabbed onto religion but has not grown. It has simply accepted religion as a form, not really as something that is there or that is there to change his consciousness. And so the consciousness literally has not grown. It's still primitive consciousness. And you find plenty of people like this. God is great. Mow them all down. Religion is perceived not as, for example, the way Krishna teaches, that religion is, Krishna characterizes religion according to your conscious development and in accord to how you relate to God. Not exactly what's the name of tradition and what your rituals are. There's no rituals mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, for example. Even in the Bhagavatam, hardly any ritual described. So when such people take to religion, it becomes very ugly. As a matter of fact, I completely understand atheists. Not all of them. Some are really mysterious to me. But some atheists and some really aggressive atheists, I understand. They're reacting to animals who have embraced religion. So for this reason, Srila Prabhupada time and time and time again always spoke of basics of Krishna consciousness, such as that you're not a master, you're a servant. Your position is tiny, you're not big, your position, you're supposed to serve. You're servant of Krishna, and not only are you servant of Krishna, you're servant of Krishna's servants, etc., etc., etc. And you should chant Harinam a lot. And physically you should serve Guru, you should serve Krishna, you should serve deity. You should practice sadhana bhakti. You should use your body physically to serve Krishna, to serve Vaishnavas, to serve non-devotees by, let's say, distributing books or prasadam, etc. You should do all these things before you jump into the pinnacle of religion. And we have seen, I think I have heard this from Sura Prabhu, and I definitely can attest this to myself. This is my experience of hearing most of Srila Prabhupada's lectures. Upon hearing his lectures, I'm left with a question, one question. Do I want to be an animal or a civilized human being? So Prabhupada said that this is how Prabhupada spoke. I mean, recently I was in Middle East, all undercover. I just took sannyas, and second day after sannyas, I put on pants. First mission in pants. Because you can't enter these countries, or be in this particular country that I was in. You can't go, or even Tulsi beads, I had to remove everything. what I was going to say now slipped my mind in regards to Prabhupada. Huh? Yes, yes. Yes, yes. Yes, yes. I remember that. But why did I... Oh, yes, correct. I remember now. Thank you. It's a teamwork. It was Gaur Purnima. And so I looked up lectures for inspiration, lectures that Srila Prabhupada gave on Gaur Purnima. And for God's sake, Prabhupada didn't even speak about Lord Chaitanya. And this is not the only one Prabhupada did. If you look at Prabhupada's lectures, I think it's very important that we understand Srila Prabhupada's attitude towards all these matters. And I personally think ISKCON could be broadly speaking, as if ISKCON is one entity, but in ISKCON, I think we could be a little more conservative into how we follow Srila Prabhupada and practice Krishna consciousness. So Srila Prabhupada started the lecture by saying, on this day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on a full moon day, and on a full moon day, everyone's bathing in Ganga, and there were all these Brahmins chanting in the river, and then he went on to talk about Brahmins and Varnashrama till the end of the lecture on Gaur Purnima. Your Prabhupada did the same thing on Radhashtami. Spoken dehinosmin yatha dehi. And this is not because we were stupid and couldn't comprehend anymore. But his guru did the same. If you listen to lectures of Srila Saraswati Thakur, did very much the same. He was criticized for coming to Radhakund and speaking on Upanishads. This is like ultimate offense to those Babajis. I guess those who are not familiar with Vaishnava history may be wondering what am I talking about, but I think you're broadcasting this, right? So sorry if I'm losing sections of the audience. And unlike many others who came and claimed elevated consciousness, we have hardly seen anyone Brahman realize the way Srila Prabhupada was. Prabhupada didn't go around, and I'm going to upset some people right now, so please forgive me, but and we can argue this point afterwards if you want to. But some people, right, we had experience, came and had became possessive of ISKCON, as if their, you know, ISKCON should have been become their property. I mean, where's the elevation of consciousness? Where's the Brahman realization? Lacking. So I don't mean to be disrespectful, but this is very important, I think. So I feel urged to say this. And so the process of... Yes. Yasyam vaishrima anayam Krishna paramapurusha, right? What's the third line? Something... Yasyam vaishrima anayam Krishna paramapurusha shoka moha bayapa... last one, okay. No. Something about bringing the soul closer to Krishna is the third line. I can't remember right now. But this is the process is to hear about Krishna. The process is to be absorbed in Krishna. This is pinnacle here, the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. We hear about Krishna's appearance in this world, Krishna's divinity, how the demigods came and offered prayers, etc., etc. This is the pinnacle. So yes, the process is to think about Krishna, to speak about Krishna, to serve Krishna, to meditate upon Krishna, and all this. But unless this is done in such a way that we're actually mastering the basics, such as that we don't act in an animalistic consciousness, that we actually see ourselves as a soul, that we see other beings as souls. As Krishna teaches in the Bhagavad Gita, that the person who's sattvic by nature, the person whose consciousness is in the mode of goodness, sees one spiritual nature everywhere as the fundamental nature of beings. And differences are merely peripheral. The color of the skin, the gender, the height, the so-called erudition. In India, they kind of stopped doing it, but I was annoyed for years. Prabhuji, what is your educational qualification? Like, what? And this is coming from a devotee. And then, on the other hand, the person whose consciousness is rajasic, passionate, such a person sees differences as fundamental. In other words, that fundamentally who we are, we're different. This literally means if we in our consciousness feel an urge or allowance to be abusive of another being or insensitive, unnecessarily insensitive towards another being, means we're rajasic at best, if not tamasic, in our consciousness. So simply, this is something that requires practice. A lot of Harinam. A lot of hearing from wise souls such as Srila Prabhupada. A lot of reading Srila Prabhupada's books. Hearing time and time again. You're not a soul. They really imbibe this to start to perceive ourselves as spiritual beings. They start to see other beings as spiritual beings. And therefore, then later on that moves on, and then you start to see religion as a qualitative concept rather than a set of rituals. And you have issues with people because they don't belong to the same team. This is again same animalistic consciousness where you see the hard boundaries in between. But Srila Prabhupada said time and time again that Krishna consciousness is not religion in the conventional sense of the term. But it is the soul proper. These are Prabhupada's words. It is the soul proper. So that is how we ought to hear about Krishna. That is how we ought to read Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how we ought to relate to the 10th canto. And by the way, 10th canto is the 10th canto. It's not the first canto, if you notice. So it takes a while to get here. In other words, it is understood that by the time you get here, you will have gotten purified a bit to where you begin to see yourself as a spirit soul, and not act on the platform of constantly being under a threat, that kind of lower consciousness. But we see when Srila Prabhupada wrote Krishna book, he wrote it in such a way that it's foolproof. It's probably not maha-mega foolproof. You can be like such a serious fool that even Prabhupada's Krishna book won't help. Yeah. I guess if you're so determined. But it's largely foolproof that Srila Prabhupada speaks of very elevated topics which are otherwise not understandable by people. By Srimati Kunti Devi that says that Krishna is understood only by Paramahamsas. Only by Paramahamsas. Then we could go into, I'm running out of time here, but we could go into what is a Paramahamsa. There also Srila Prabhupada gave in his purva, what is Paramahamsa and how to get there. Like neophyte sannyasis are supposed to carry their dandas at all times until they become Paramahamsas. Only then do they put away their danda. Of course, we travel a lot, so it's quite cumbersome too. Of course, nowadays they have portable dandas too, if you didn't know. I learned all this recently. I'm sorry, I didn't even get to say about Krishna actually being so nice by offering protection to devotees. So I'll just summarize this in a couple of sentences. That is that, and Srila Prabhupada said this many times in his lectures, that whoever holds on to Krishna's lotus feet will be protected by Krishna. And as long as we're trying to hang in there and hold on, to hold on to Krishna means to hold on to the instructions of the spiritual master. That's what it means. And as long as we're trying to do this and we're sincerely doing this, then we are going to enjoy Krishna's protection. Oh my goodness, so many examples. I'll give one example and I'll end there. A god brother of mine, younger to me, junior to me by age, by initiation, by knowledge of Shastra, in every respect, seriously junior to me. I'll spare you the details, but in one point he became terminally ill. And in his terminal illness, he was bedridden, he could barely move. And it was time of Prabhupada's marathon. And how did he spend this December, last days of his life? Well, he was definitely reading Srila Prabhupada's books, hearing Srila Prabhupada's lectures, but he was also distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. He was serving the mission of the spiritual master. And he was doing it by phone. I mean, I don't know how, well, like, why do you do that? Like, what, you get in, get a phone book and, like, do the tele, what they call that, tele sales, telemarketing, you know, the worst of all jobs, because no one wants to get one of those calls. And then at the last few days of his life, he was taken urgently to Vrindavan, you know. And all of a sudden, there were all signs of auspiciousness. Like everyone, there was no devotee who didn't think this person was going back to Godhead, which means he became a pure devotee. No one thought this person is not going back to Godhead. And all the symptoms are the cows passing. I don't remember. And I know so many devotees who passed away in Vrindavan. But somewhere or other, when this little brahmachari passed away, it was all over. It was some maybe like a decade ago or so. It was all over the internet. It became a celebrity all of a sudden. And his guru was there. Our Guru Maharaj was there. Everything was there. And this kind of auspiciousness, he passed away. And now Krishna took very nice care of him. Because he tried to hold on to the instructions of his spiritual master. This is not baby stuff. This is serious stuff. Otherwise, we see when people of lower consciousness take to religion, it's ugly. You can't have capacity to digest Krishna. If there's a mounts and mounts of pride, etc. So anyhow, I'm rambling at this point. Please forgive me. Do we have time for questions and answers? Oh, we do. Okay. I thought it ends at 8:15. Okay. I do as I'm told. So Archita Prabhu says there is time. So if there's any questions or comments. Well, we don't get lost in the small unit of time. Because if you perceive time as just a few small hours, then, you know, grievance becomes a horrible thing. But if you think in larger terms, if you perceive time as something that's colossal, then what's me? What are my troubles, etc.? Well, people lower consciousness are attracted to everything and anything, and religion is a wonderful product. I mean, seriously, besides religion, whoever gives you anything meaningful, literally, if you don't speak in terms of eternity, nothing is meaningful, because everything comes to an end. Once it has come to an end, it's like as if it had never existed. What's the point? Literally, existence is meaningless. And therefore, people have to, because they live meaningless lives, therefore they have to compensate. Get on Facebook. Oh, universe, people, peeps, send me some love. I'm having tough time, something. You're having tough time because you live a useless life, so you are useless. Live a useful life. Live a spiritual life, and you'll be naturally useful. You'll never feel despondent. You will not need cheaply beg like this and doing this kind of cheap fixing type of things. But be useful. Take to something which is literally useful, meaningful, Krishna consciousness. And then there's so much to do also. Then be useful. Take it and spread it all over, you know, make the information available. So why do people... It's a great product. It's a great prayer, and it's not only that people of lower consciousness come to it, but we also have to understand that religion is the thing that elevates your consciousness. That is the thing that elevates your consciousness. Concepts such as soul. How do you speak in terms of equality? Unless there is a spiritual concept that we're all on spiritual plane equal. How can you speak of equality? How many people, how many of these, what do you call them, same-sex marriage or whatever movement, how many of them are practicing non-violent diet? I mean, Greenpeace activists in one point, this was early 2000s, Greenpeace, what do you call them? They're agents that go around and collect money for Greenpeace. Petitioners, thank you. We met one, and this one of our brahmachari asked him something about his diet, and he revealed that it wasn't even vegetarian, you know. It's like, what? So he became a brahmachari. And then little by little, two more became our brahmacharis, and then two girls became bhaktins, you know, at our temple in San Diego. Most of them are still devotees. So that's when Coral came to Krishna consciousness also. Like that. But it was funny, like they're going around, you know, protect the whales, protect this, but they're not, you know, like, not even vegetarian, you know. So in other words, they don't have this equal vision. And this equal vision does not come just because you read Bhagavad Gita or because you perform rituals, but because you actually come to that platform that you actually do see the world. You see beings as spiritual beings rather than fleshly machines that are out there to compete with you. So, Archita Prabhu.
Thank you for a very nice class, Maharaj. I think this question was so important that we need to flesh it out a little, the answer a little more, because he asked directly, why are people of lower consciousness so attracted to religion? And it's because the leaders of many of these religions are of lower consciousness, as they market it specifically to attract those people. Mm. Like, it's not that every day somebody wakes up and wants to be a suicide bomber, for instance. They're actually convinced repeatedly, over and over again, you must do this. This is what Allah wants, and we'll take care of your family when you blow yourself up. And they're marketed in such a way that people of lower consciousness are attracted to it. Or in a little higher form, they marketed that God will take care of all your financial needs. God will, if you just come to this church and put money in this hundi box or this collection plate, then God will take care of you over and over and over again. It's marketed in such a way that people of lower consciousness can't help but be attracted. Because it gives them exactly what they're looking for, us against them. We're better than them. You join this religion and we're the chosen people. We're the saved people. Everybody else is going to hell. You join. It's marketed in such a way that people of lower consciousness are naturally attracted.
Very true, very true. I will now remember that next time I ask that question, I'll have a good answer. Very true. Okay. Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.